Hello and welcome to Goblet of Wine, a drunken Harry Potter podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Charlie, and we're two 20-somethings rereading our favourite childhood book, this time with added alcohol and cynicism.
In today's episode, we're going to be discussing the film Order of the Phoenix with special guest Connor.
Connor. Just Connor. Just no other context.
That's who I am.
I don't know his surname.
Connor, the guy I'm sleeping with. So grab a glass of your favourite bastardised Guinness beverage and listen along for this drunken reminiscent journey. I remembered it.
Well done. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
There's a man in the room. And it's not Neil.
I just wandered in.
Who is the man that's sitting in my flat, Charlie?
It's my boyfriend, Connor.
It's me. I'm the Connor, the boyfriend, Connor. Well, like, have you described me on the podcast before?
Yes, in horrifying detail. She said awful things. It's going to be quite embarrassing.
Yeah,
actually.
Inches and everything.
Oh, brilliant.
All five.
That can't have taken long.
Wait, I thought you said four.
It depends on my mood, really.
I like that only a couple of episodes ago we were getting messages like, oh, I don't know how Charlie is single, which, like, thank you. I'm not.
Yeah, but the problem with the podcast is people listen in order. So, like, they've spent many years, like, you know.
The many years I was single.
And also, you just make so many jokes about it. People are used to the jokes, you know. It's hard now. Yep. You've got to come up with new material. That's hard for you because you are a joke repeater.
I am. I have two jokes.
Yeah, and one is about your singleness.
Yeah, exactly.
One joke.
Yeah.
Now remaining.
Is that
sorry.
Yeah? Yeah. Well, now no, I've added another one. It's about you having a tiny penis.
Yeah. I'm glad that we've clarified it's a joke and not the truth.
For those that can't tell, you should be able to tell. He's Irish, which we had like some of the like American people on Discord being like, "Are we gonna be able to understand him?" I think so. He's got a very mild...
Yeah.
You've been here a while.
Well, like, my accent was fairly dulland in Ireland anyway. Like, everyone thought I was American over there.
Yeah.
My granddad was big on grammar. But yeah, it's saturated since coming here.
Yeah, can you just ham it up for the podcast, please?
Sure, I can do my best anyway.
Anyway, so hopefully people can understand him because you cannot subtitle a podcast.
Yeah, and we'll get to know more of his Harry Potter things about him in a bit. But first, we're going to force him to read out patrons who've joined us.
With us.
The first person we have to thank for becoming a new patron, we need to give a hash brown size thank you to Holly.
A killer whale size thank you to Kenna.
Ooh, a Pavarotti belter thank you to C. Pavlik.
Wow.
Very
that was
good.
I would argue you should have done a C alliteration, but sure.
Pavarotti singing loud,
sure.
Big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
An antelope size thank you to Amy who?
A marzipan size thank you to Marsha.
A nice and large thank you to Niana.
And a Holly Willoughby size thank you to Hayley.
I think you'll find her name is Holly Willoughby.
Holly Willoughby size thank you to Hayley.
Yep.
They have all joined the Patreon where at the moment we're actually uploading some bonus content.
Yeah.
What?
I edited it for once.
I uploaded it for once. Look at us doing a podcast. They also get access to the Discord where, as you guys know, recently all the points were reset. So it's a great time to enter the House Cup and make some friends around the world who for some reason also listen to this trash podcast. Should we get on to interrogating Connor?
Yeah.
Connor, the first question we always ask guests, what's your Hogwarts house?
Oh, well, I've been told to redo the quiz on Pottermore or whatever.
I mean,
but
that's just not a good...
What do you feel in your heart?
I feel like I lean towards Ravenclaw, but I don't know why.
I can see that for
I
you.
Can see
yeah?
That. Yeah.
I do, yeah, either Hufflepuff or Ravenclaw. I might nudge it in the direction of Ravenclaw.
I'd
but...
appreciate that. I don't like Hufflepuff.
Why?
Yellow doesn't suit me.
The next question we ask guests is, what is your Harry Potter background? Explain, like,
your experience with the series.
Oh,
What are you coming to the podcast with? What are you bringing to the Harry Potter table?
As I've told you, Charlie, because you can't see where I'm nodding, where I was in Ireland, books had only recently been seen as not witchcraft because they're so behind in the times. So my only access to them was like the books we had in school, and they had Goblet of Fire, which I started, but I was a bit too young, I think, to sink my teeth into because I didn't know the whole backstory. So my only real experience is with the films. And I remember that I was the same age as Harry when I saw the film. I think I was 11 when that one came out, as were a couple of my cousins. So it was like me and the entire family were massive into following the films and all of that. But I don't know any of the actual information around it.
Apart from Charlie's making you read the books for the first time.
Yeah, so you're now on Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for you.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I'm very aware that they were written for children.
Yeah, they get better.
Yeah, no, definitely. I believe it. And they're still a great read. I'm having a good time with them.
Yeah, well, you know, you went from Dune to Chamber of Secrets. So
yeah,
you're already going through the tedious books.
The Dune was more tedious, to be fair.
Yeah.
Like, I'm now blazing through Harry Potter because I had to go back through every paragraph in Dune to make sure I understood it.
Especially, yeah, the second one's probably just like, woo!
Yeah.
Why are you here for this episode?
Because I made him.
But yeah. There was a reason. Is this not your favourite film of the Harry Potter films?
Yeah, but I think it's just for that one scene. That one scene I was gushing about.
Yeah. Okay. The end scene.
Mm.
And then the most important question, what are we drinking today?
We're drinking... Oh, God, actually, any Irish people listening are going to like want to hunt me down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm kind of trying to throw you in the deep end with it now. It's a Black Russian and Guinness, which is vodka, Kahlua, Coke and Guinness.
Wow.
Mm. Have you made this up or is this a real thing?
This is a real thing. I was shown it in the Irish pub that I was working in earlier this year and I was shocked to discover it's not awful.
Okay.
Mm.
Cheers.
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 That's really weird.
That is some flavours.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, it's like sweet Guinness.
Yeah. Oh.
I like it.
It's okay, actually. I haven't had it since I was in the Irish pub, so.
I'm not sure what I think. I think my taste buds are confused.
My taste buds are like, you're drinking some sort of vodka Coke. No, you're not. You're drinking a Guinness. Whoa.
Yeah.
It's transcendent, isn't it?
I like it. So, it's a film episode, so we have our usual chaos categories.
Because we can't podcast and nothing exposes that more than our film episodes.
And I've got a suggestion, okay?
Oh, no.
Keep the categories. Change the order in which we do the categories.
Okay.
Because the one we start with, plot, is more just miscellaneous stuff that doesn't fit into the other, so should be at the end.
Yeah, that is true.
I think it should go casting, adaption, cinematography, plot miscellaneous.
I support this.
Okay, great.
Cool.
See, I'm trying to rein in the chaos.
Yep. Stop reading my notes.
No.
What do you think of Daniel Radcliffe?
I don't like him.
What?
I don't like him as Harry Potter anyway.
Oh.
I've said it a number of times before even having discussed Harry Potter with you that he is the least interesting character in the whole franchise.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
But that's the character, not necessarily the casting.
Yeah, but I feel like it's his acting of the character that makes him even less interesting.
It's also the writing they gave him. They took out lots of the funny bits that Harry does, even though Daniel Radcliffe is actually an amazing, amazing comic actor.
Yeah. He's brilliant.
Yeah. Like film six, he's so good. And then they like never repeated any of that.
Yeah.
Rupert Grint.
Yeah, he's great, to be fair. He's just fun to look at.
In what way?
As in, like, he's just got such an atmosphere about him. He's just like... I want him to be my best friend. He's fun. I like that guy a lot.
Emma Watson.
Mm.
He's like, God forbid, a posh English woman.
Oh, yeah, because I have no experience with those. She's grand. She does the job very well as Hermione.
Mm-hmm.
But she does do that thing that you pointed out while we were watching, that she's very like... how do I describe this movement that I'm doing?
But it was I've only really noticed it in this film when we've like done deep watch the other four and she wasn't doing it before, and I can't remember her doing it in the later two.
It's like a weird neck stretchy.
The only way I
floppy.
Could describe it was she'd kind of realised that people found her pretty and was playing up like what she thought. I don't know. It was like she ate something off a fork at one point, and it was not like how someone would eat things off a fork. It was how someone would eat things off a fork if they were very aware that people were watching them who found them attractive.
Women laughing eating salad.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, but you know, she was a teenager at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just a bit weird.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. She's just very aware of herself.
Yeah. What's your opinion, having not really read the books, on Michael Gambon?
Well, obviously, I prefer the first one. Whatever his name was, I don't know.
Richard Harris.
Right, yeah. He was much just nicer to be around.
I think you're only saying that because you're scared to compliment Michael Gambon, because you know my feelings.
I know your feelings, and I'm not scared of you. So.
Damn it. Why are you not scared of me?
And I'm slightly taller. He is very aggressive for, like, not very good reasons. Like that bit in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
Everyone references it, but it does just come out of left field.
Yeah.
But with my experience with Dumbledore being the character from the films, I think he does that character well.
Yeah.
Because it's totally different from the book, as I know now.
Yeah. Okay, should we jump into the
new
people?
Casting? Okay, yeah. So should we talk about Tonks first? Because, you know, you're angry about things.
Yes. I feel so bad because I'm sure the actress is lovely.
Yeah. And I've seen her in other things. She's been good.
No, I hate her.
Oh, in everything?
As a person in everything.
Oh, wow.
Like, didn't like her in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, of course she's in Game of Thrones.
Didn't like her in that YouTube Red series that we went to the fucking premiere of.
Yeah, no, but that was weird.
That was weird. I just have a problem with this actress for no reason.
Okay.
Much like you and Owen Wilson. yeah, like, I just, something about her I hate. I think she's awful as Tonks.
Yeah, see, I don't...
And a lot of this is also down to the script.
Yeah. See, I don't hate her as an actress, and I don't necessarily hate her portrayal of Tonks if she'd been given a fairer script, but the script is so awful towards Tonks. And then part of it also comes into the way they styled her. They made her, like, steampunky, which just so was not my interpretation of Tonks. I was like... Okay, that's weird. They made her script bad. And also, just something about the way she acts Tonks, I think, comes across as, like, even though she's trying to be playful, it comes across as really serious.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the sense she was young. Like,
no.
I didn't get the sense she was in her early 20s and, like, almost messing around.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, she seems too old. The way she plays it is kind of, like, weird. It seems a bit like Pompous Big Heady, kind of, like, very... up herself. But yeah, like, the way that I picture Tonks when I read the books is like a young, fun, ditzy, just not Tonks how it is in the films.
Yeah.
I like that you started with Tonks when actually my first casting thing that I wrote down was Mrs. Fig.
Oh yes, we've never seen her before.
Yeah, and why is she northern?
Why shouldn't she be northern?
Like, I know that you could argue she's northern and then she moved to Surrey.
Yeah.
But.
Of course.
It just seems a bit weird. But overall, I don't really like the casting of Mrs. Fig. I just picture her, like, older, especially because I now have that headcanon that she's Dumbledore's, like, beard.
Beard, yeah.
And, like, you know, childhood best friend. So I just picture her, like, older and just a bit, like, just a bit more life in her.
Yeah, she didn't seem that lifelike. Like, the bit in the books where she whacks someone with cat food. I couldn't imagine that actress whacking people with cat food.
Yeah. I also had a note about someone we've already spoken about, but Dudley's acting is weird in this film.
Why is he weird?
Just, like, the entire, like, first bit, he's just acting a bit like he's been hit on the head really hard.
I thought that was the idea of Dudley, though, that he's supposed to be a bit slow.
Yeah, but I think they're
not
slow. And then there's, like, being thick, and then there's, like, seeming like someone you're concussed.
But to me, Dudley doesn't come across as thick in the books.
Yeah, he's just...
He's just a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but he's, like, smart enough to know how to wind Harry up in the right way.
Yeah.
But how to get what he wants from his mum and dad. Like, to me, he's not dumb.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think... Yeah, maybe part of it was the direction, but I just found the acting a bit weird.
I get so distracted by him at the beginning of this film with what they dressed him in.
Oh my God. It's so, like, off the time.
But off the wrong time, because they were like, oh, fuck the fact it's meant to be in the 90s. We'll move it to the 2000s.
You know what I would love to see that gang wearing?
What?
Like, baggy grunge shit, because it was the 90s.
Yes.
If they all did, like, skater boy, like...
But yeah, the bright, shiny top things, I was just, and the necklaces, I was just like, what?
Yeah.
I was just picturing, like, Dudley and his gang, like the sharks and the jets coming at Harry, like...
Harry.
Pick the wrong part of town.
Then the other new person in the order is Kingsley.
Yes!
great love. I mean, great cast for the fact that he gets all his lines taken away from him. So it's hard to tell. But he, like, immediately has that very calming presence. And when he speaks, it's very calm, which I feel
calming,
like was...
but, like, authoritative.
Authoritative. So they got that perfectly. They just didn't give him enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, two lines and one of them is racist. That's my entire take
yeah,
on it.
Yeah, the, like, that's weird sassy enough. Line that
he's
they give
got
him.
Style.
From what you've told me about him in the books, like, I desperately want to know what his potential would be as a character.
Yeah.
Oh, I think you'll love him in the books.
I really,
it sounds like I will.
Yeah, he's really cool. I will say that even though they didn't give him any lines, I think I mentioned it in a previous episode, the costuming they gave him is awesome. Like, styling the robes to look like some traditional African garb is, like, a really clever idea by them, and using purple, which is like an incredibly royal color, and like tying that into Kingsley, like, it's clever. Just give him some damn lines.
Yeah, absolutely. Then, such a waste.
Yeah. Then we have Umbridge.
Yeah, I always feel bad for this actress because it's like when you get cast as a character that's repeatedly referred to as toad-like.
I know. And apparently, she's even spoken about this. Apparently, like, the casting directors came to her and they was something like, oh, we think you're absolutely perfect for this role. And she was like, thank you.
Fuck you.
I'm going to have to work out how to take this as a compliment.
Yeah. Wow. But I love her.
Oh,
I really
she's
like
just
her.
So perfect. Like, she just does it. And you can tell how well she's studied the book. Like, because she does, she's got all the tiny mannerisms, like, and, but she's almost invented her own way of doing them.
Like, yeah.
She's got this weird, like, bird-like quality, I noticed, where, like, when she's sort of analysing somebody or whatever, her, like, head sort of twitches around.
Yes!
And
she's
like, it's really strange. She's like,
but it's almost like an annoyance thing as well. It's like, oh, it annoys me.
Like a nervous tick or something like that.
Yeah, and the passive-aggressive way of speaking, like the way she structures sentences, like, it's Imelda Staunton.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That was a thing that I actually did write down in the notes.
Oh, well done.
Is the conflict between her and McGonagall when they're on the stairs. I was saying the blocking. It's where you put actors during the scene. I love, as the power dynamic shifts in that argument, that they sort of move up and down the stairs depending on who is winning the argument. It's just great.
At the end, McGonagall takes a step down because she's so shocked she backs off to be with the students.
And then Umbridge
so
takes another step up to be like, I have won this conflict.
Yeah, it's quite heavy handed, but I don't hate it. Like, I quite like it. I'm like, you know what? Fair.
Especially because the whole film, and we'll talk about this kind of overall at the end, has a kind of cheesy quality to it. Like, the whole film is a tiny bit campy in some ways.
I was literally about to say it's camp.
It is! Like, which is weird for a Harry Potter film. Yeah. And, like, we'll discuss whether it works, but to me it has, like, a camp quality to it, so that fits in.
It almost plays like a stage performance in a lot of ways. Like the bit with Filch and the ladder and, like, spinning around, the kids ducking underneath. That's all very...
it's very theatrical.
Yeah, do you know what? It would... And I can see even some of the action scenes working in, like, a stage performance.
Yeah, they should really make a theatre show of Harry Potter.
No. No, wait, stop. Luna, Ivana Lynch.
Wrong hair, love her.
Yeah.
Wrong hair?
Wrong hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Should have been, like, dirty dark blonde.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's pretty perfect.
I quite like the interpretation.
Yeah, it just gives her... It gives her more of an airy fairy look, which... ties into my only criticism of her and the way she plays the role, is it's a tiny bit too airy-fairy for me.
It becomes slightly one-dimensional.
Because there are bits in the book where she goes harsh and, like, she snaps at Hermione, or, like, she will, like, snatch a newspaper back of someone, and she has that edge that I cannot imagine Ivana Lynch's interpretation doing.
Yeah, I do agree. I don't know how much of that might have been the... script though, because I don't think that those lines were in it.
Yeah, it's just I can't imagine it. But then maybe it would have been really cool to see. But yeah, she for her being a fan cast, essentially, she's just so perfect. It's like, how did you pull this girl?
Yeah, you can definitely see how they would have interviewed a lot of people and, like, auditioned and ended up with her for sure. But yeah, I do agree, she's slightly too one-dimensional. But I think, you know, a lot of these, like, quite young actors, you can say that. They kind of pick the main trait of the character and only act that.
Yeah. And she's so different from, like, the other five in the group at the end.
Mm.
She really stands out compared to them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the last new person was Bellatrix.
No, you're forgetting a very important person.
Who?
Nigel!
Okay, he was in my adaption section, but fine, let's talk about Nigel. Nigel is to film 5 what Bem is to film 3.
Yeah. I just...
Bem in film three. I'm
trying to remember.
It's like trying to catch smoke. It's like trying to catch smoke with your bare hands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just...
Who is this man? Why is he into Hogwarts?
I love it when they do it because it's just like the names that they pick are so at odds with the naming in the Harry Potter series. Like, I said this when we were watching it, but it's like Hermione and, like, Neville. And then it's Nigel.
No, but that...
Bem.
But this is what we're saying. Colin is almost like that, and it works, because Colin is a muggle-born. And you needed this young, innocent member of the DA who was really keen to get involved, and the other saw as a child. But then, and I don't even want to say the same spoiler about Colin, because that's not in the films.
Yeah.
But, and then they swapped it for... So they essentially wrote Colin Creevy in... but changed it to Nigel and then didn't carry it through to the end of the series.
No, it's just... Because we did have Colin, didn't we? He was in the films.
We met him at
Oh, yeah, of course. But it's like, what did the actor do?
But
like,
even if the actor...
Who did they piss off?
Even if the actor couldn't continue...
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind... Like, Lavender Brown changed halfway through. Well, that wasn't for any good... Well, anyway.
No. Yeah.
But, like... You know, Dumbledore changed halfway through. It wouldn't have been a big deal, but instead we have Nigel, who's only in this film. So you're going to include Nigel, bring him through to film seven.
He's in it so much,
like,
as well.
So much, like, Nigel.
He's just in every scene. Like, honestly, I remember watching it at the time, and I've said this ever since. I was confused at the time because I genuinely was like, is this like a producer's child that has like... being like, Daddy, I really want to be in Harry Potter. And then they've turned up on set and be like, right, it's Nigel. And then just put their son in like the front of every scene. It's bizarre.
When he goes to the wall, because he's like, they're trying to break in. I'm like, what are you doing, Nigel?
Yeah, get out the shot, Nige.
Nige. I just call him Colin.
Yeah. Oh, no sense.
Ugh.
Yeah, Helena Bonham Carter.
Was this written for her? Like, I
honestly,
just, there's no way I can imagine anyone else doing it.
Like, I genuinely, did they audition anyone else?
No,
surely not.
I wouldn't be surprised if they headhunted her for that part.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like absolutely. Like, she was just perfect, and also I'm just so in love with her, just in general. Like, she is just my type of woman.
It's the way in everything I've seen, she doesn't mind being styled in whatever way possible. And she's an incredibly beautiful woman, which works really well for Bellatrix, because they then make her look pretty, like, shitty in all the Azkaban scenes. And it works for this, like, fallen beauty who's also gone mad. Like, she just...
And she had those horrible fake teeth that she had to wear to try and uggify her.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, those fake teeth. Which I'm just... And then she acted... And the laugh, the little...
Yeah. I love her.
She's
and like
so good.
Even the way that she moves, like the thing when she kind of like
she looks drunk.
Yeah, but like also like, graceful. Like she kind of glides into the fire in like such like a smooth kind of like she kind of dances into it.
She's got like Captain Jack energy in that way.
Yeah. Which also works because she's meant to be like very upper class in Wizarding Society. Mm. So again, it does feel like she once graced ballrooms and now she's like a crazy person.
I didn't know that about her backstory. I thought she was like one of the blacks.
Yeah, they're like meant to be like upper,
really,
really upper class, like very rich.
I have
fancy people.
I have yet to discover this, I guess, in my reading.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I a bit of a hot take. I don't like Helena Bonham Carter for the most part.
In what things she's in?
Yeah, I adore her as Bellatrix Lestrange. I think she plays that part so well. But in anything else, I'm just not that fond. Because I think she just sort of does the same thing.
I think I can see what you mean from the kind of Tim Burton standpoint. But yeah, I think her, when she's not just doing the Tim Burton shit, she's amazing.
Outside of Tim Burton, she's good.
But... She was very good in The Crown, where she's playing like an actual like historical figure who she was studying off of. Like, she does a very different performance to all the Tim Burton stuff. But I do agree, they often give her like that same role in all the Tim Burton stuff.
Yeah, to
but
be
that's
killed
just
by Johnny
what
Depp.
Tim Burton is like, he just makes the same film over and over.
Should we go to adaption?
Yeah.
Why do they constantly not give Harry's Patronus a shape?
It's weird.
And it's like such an important part of book three.
As in like an animal form?
Yeah. Mm. And but then when he's getting rid of the Dementors at the beginning of the film,
it kind of is like a ball that might have antlers.
Yeah, and then later on when they're doing the Patronuses in the DA, they will have very distinct shapes.
Yeah.
Like, a lot more distinct than I ever pictured them being.
Like, oh, how they did it in the film is how I pictured them, but then Harry's becomes a weird ball.
I always pictured them as, like, vaguely animal-shaped. I didn't picture them as looking like a literal, like...
like holographic projection of an animal.
Yeah.
Maybe Harry's Patronus is just representative of his personality.
A shapeless mass.
Yeah.
So, like, this is kind of a note about the whole thing, the whole way they did an adaptation, but I especially thought at the beginning... the film is really, really, really fast-paced.
Yeah.
And it's, like, well known that it's the shortest film for the longest book. But it's clever because when I was watching it, it took me a really long time to, like, notice anything they cut out. And they just, because they do every scene, but really short, and then move on to the next one.
Yeah. Because they don't put any plot in.
Yes. But, okay. So I used to hate this film the most because I was like, I don't know, I just didn't like it. And the more I think about it and, like, the other films they made and the bad way they did them, the more I think this one is the most cleverly adapted.
Mm.
Like, for the ones, apart from Seven, where they got to split it in two, for the ones where they had to make a book into a film, I think they did the best job of changing what they needed to change, cutting out what they needed to cut out, and speeding up what they needed to speed up to get a book into a 2-hour film.
I kind of really disagree because I just think that they, like, included some really random shit that they didn't need to. I think there were smarter ways that they could have cut shit out.
Yeah.
Like the entire bit with Gorp, I feel like they didn't need to.
No, that was stupid.
They didn't need to include. They could have cut that and actually included more of the plot.
Yeah.
So that kind of annoyed me. Like, you know, we have our entire thing about how much better they could have done, like the Sirius not being there reveal. Like, I just think that that loses any impact in the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they could have done it smarter.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, like, I have really mixed feelings about it because I think it's parts of it are really, really well adapted. And then they kind of bungle it at the end when that's the bit they rush the most.
Yeah.
But there's loads of things in general that they do really cleverly to adapt it. What I think they do well that the other films don't do as well. So basically, they use film in a clever way to change the source material to suit the medium of film. So I feel like basically...
I know,
I still said that badly.
I get it.
Okay, so basically, in some of the other films... they just use exposition loads to try to get the book's point across. They're just like, let's just talk loads.
Yeah.
And, like, they'll get it. This film, in a lot of ways, does some smarter things, like the montages of the newspapers.
Yeah.
There's loads and loads of flashback scenes and Harry having memories and things like that. So they don't have to have someone doing a load of exposition.
That
they know that their medium is film rather than a book and are clever about how they show things.
Yeah, that is true, actually, because I think something that a lot of the films do at times, you have, like, random bits that sound like video game audio. You know, a bit in, like, video games where they essentially explain the plot and what you have to do next.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, the characters, the dialogue is weird because they're trying to explain to the audience through having a character say. So they just speak in a way that you would never actually... you wouldn't explain what was happening or what you were going to do next to the room. But all of these characters will just say, wow, this just happened and now we're going to do this. And it sounds like it's out of, like, a Harry Potter PC game.
Exactly.
Where it's trying to tell the player what to do, but it's not, it's in a film, but it's because that's how they're telling the story and it just becomes weird.
Exactly. And I feel like in, like, the previous film, if they had needed to set up, oh, the Wizarding World is discrediting Harry through the newspapers, someone would have said that. Hermione would have said that. Yeah. But instead they choose to show, like, the newspapers and like, just there's examples of that throughout the film.
That is true. I just don't think I can forgive this film for the entire plot and explanation that it just does not include.
Yeah.
It's like they saved a lot of time and then they went, are we going to use this to explain the entire purpose of this film?
No. Yeah, they kind of forgot what the purpose of this was.
Because like I said, when we finished it, you could literally watch all of the films in order, missing this one, and it would not make any less sense.
All you'd need to be told is that Sirius dies.
Yeah, that's the only thing. Aside from that, it doesn't add anything to the overall series, whereas the book is the opposite. The book adds the most to the series. It literally explains the five previous books.
Yeah, words. Because this film basically ends with the big things being Sirius dies and Harry finding out one of either Voldemort has to kill him or he has to kill Voldemort.
Yeah.
That wasn't the important part of the prophecy. We kind of already knew that. So it's like, okay, what else? No, nothing else matters.
No,
okay,
nothing,
good. We're done.
Nothing else.
We're moving on. And we're moving on to, why are they flying along the Thames?
That is annoying.
They fight directly at a boat as if it's like, who cares if we get seen? Like, the driver of that boat.
There's like the camera from their POV is facing the boat. You can see people on the boat facing the camera that will have clearly seen these brooms. Like, do they have a wizarding equivalent of a neuralizer from Men in Black?
No. Well, yes. They've got, like, memory reversal charms.
But they're trying to secretly remove Harry from that house so the government doesn't find out. And then they're like, what if we flew in front of some boats?
The Muggle government is fine. We can show them Harry there. It's fine.
It's like they owed the London Tourism Board a favour.
Oh, it's... I feel like at this point, Harry Potter is contractually obliged to show a shot of London at some point. They were like, we've got to make them fly along the river.
Because as we know, this is a film... That was
entirely
based in London. The entire films, all of those great lakes, all of those castles, just in London.
Watford's in London.
Yeah, they had Grow Up tied up in Green Park, right?
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. Yeah. Hogwarts is the Tower of London.
Oh, yeah, I knew I recognised it.
Funny. What was the fucking point in bothering to put creature in?
Yeah, just
so is that just so he makes sense in the later films?
Yeah, but he had a plot in this. He's meant to have a plot in this book.
Oh, you mentioned. Yeah,
he's an essential part of the end of the book.
Yeah,
what? Really?
Essential to the plot.
Babe, I cannot stress enough how little plot this film has versus the book.
Oh, that's why I feel like I'm coming into this with so little knowledge.
Yeah, it's quite funny. I like it.
But yeah, actually, I suppose it is. It's about the last one because. By the time they were making the fifth film, I think the seventh book was out. So they were finally going, do you know, fucking hell, we might need to start prepping some things.
Yeah.
Shit. We better do the bare minimum with this character. Just include him for one line and then he's never in it again. Yeah.
Like Harry Potter, bold as brass, and then go away. All right, there. That's his part done. Yep. Now we know who he is.
He's such a big part in the books.
Yeah. I've got one note that just says Room of Requirement, and I didn't write down what I was actually going to say about the room. Oh, how it opens. How he just, like, one, how it's just Neville walking by discovers the Room of Requirement.
Why is Neville always a house elf?
Yeah.
Why is Neville Dobby? Just put Dobby in the films. Yeah. Because, like, who gave Harry the Gillyweed? Not Neville. Dobby. Who discovered the Room of Requirement? Not Neville. Dobby.
Yeah. They do just trade Dobby and Neville. Weird.
Willy-nilly.
Yeah.
And then they're like, God, I wonder if people will be upset in film 7 when we kill off this character when we haven't included him in forever.
Yeah.
So they didn't kill off Neville in his place. To be fair, if you're saying Neville is Dobby,
they
could have gone that way.
Yeah. Might have made less sense, but yeah.
Because they're not guilty of that already.
Yeah, but yeah, also he just walks past, and then it's there. And it's like, huh?
And it's like, it's not even in a hidden corridor. It seems like it's in a main corridor in Hogwarts, like outside the hall.
Because I always pictured it in like a really, really small corridor.
That kind of led to nowhere.
That you have to walk like, back and forwards a few
times.
This
is the first time I'd noticed this because the film moves so fast, like you kind of, and again, our brains just fill in stuff. They move forward the conversation with Luna about her mum dying and about her bonding with Harry right to the first third of the film during that festival thing, which is like nice in some ways because it feels more like Harry has people to talk to, but it loses that payoff at the end of Luna sacrificing so much for them and then like finding out that she like relates to Harry so much and he'd never bothered to ask her.
Yeah
So it was just kind
I guess at least it like makes her more of a character, so it makes more sense than that she's there at the end.
Yeah, I didn't mind the fact it had been moved forward, but they were trying to build this like Harry has no one to turn to, and it's like he just had a nice chat with Luna.
Yeah.
So Harry has the dream he's been attacked by the snake, and then Dumbledore's like, there's no time to waste. And Snape grabs him and pulls him for an occlumency lesson immediately.
Bit too late, love. Like,
but also, what do you mean there's no time to wait? What? Harry needs to go see Arthur. Get off him.
Yeah. There's a lot of winking in this film.
There is a lot of winking.
Like, a lot of winking.
A lot of winking.
I said it during the film, no one closes their eye entirely when they're winking. Sirius does it twice, and it's just like, it looks like a twitch.
Yeah.
And Dumbledore does the same thing. It's annoying.
Yeah. Can you wink? That was awful.
Can you do the other eye? Ugh. Oh, because I can only wink with one eye.
Really?
Oh, I can do either. I'm talented.
No, the other one I can't do.
I'm just winking loads.
Will the mic pick up the sound of your eyelids clapping?
That would be horrifying.
It really would. Yeah, a lot of winking, but I enjoy it. Like, I'm here for the winking. It's
when it's Gary Oldman. Winks, yeah.
When it's Gary.
He winks at Harry multiple times.
I believe it's 3 times that he winks at Harry.
Speaking of weird things happening a lot, Daddy!
The amount, Daddy's home!
Within like a 20-second span of the film, Molly Weasley says Daddy 3 times.
And she
including
even,
twice in one sentence.
She doesn't even have that many lines in this film. So no. What percentage of the words she said in this film were the word
Too
Daddy?
Too many.
How much did she get paid for each utterance of Daddy?
Great question. Now we're thinking about the right question.
Yes. This is your contribution.
Great. Well, also the fact there's a lot of raw meat in the film. That was something that I picked up on.
Yes. Very good one.
Weird
also a lot of
raw
meat.
Weirdly, there's some like conspiracy to do with veganism somewhere deep in between the lines of the script. But...
Yeah, that or this film was paid for by like the London Tourism Board and a butcher.
The butcher. They make Neville tell the story about his parents rather than it being split between the Pensieve in the previous film and the hospital, which, like, it just doesn't feel important. Like, he's just kind of like, oh, my parents were tortured. It's like, okay, great, we're moving on. Cool. What?
Yeah.
Like, you just lose all impact.
There's a lot of, like, very awkward scenes in this film. And this is, like, one of them where it's just kind of like that. And then there's just, like, silence. And then it's like, moving on.
Moving on. Yeah, it just takes away all the impact, which, like...
Yeah.
They reduce Neville's character down anyway because they cut out, I'm not going to say it, but the big thing about Neville at the end. So it's just kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm sorry I'm stifling you now.
It's actually quite fun.
Yeah, they all know, the listeners.
Yeah.
So they cut out Marietta and switch the snitch to Cho.
Yeah. And they cut out the acne, which good.
Which... Actually, for a film adaptation, I don't mind them cutting out Marietta and making it Cho, because they haven't got a lot of time, and it does add more of a sucker punch. But they then say at the end of the film that Cho told because of Veritaserum.
Yeah.
But Harry acts like a dick towards her afterwards. I'm like, she was literally tortured into giving this information.
Yeah. Yep.
Harry's a dick in general.
Well, he is. But he's actually like, I hate you now. It's like, she took truth potion. What do you want her to do?
I guess, I can see why they removed Marietta, and it does give them an easier way to end that relationship between Harry and Cho without having to do the whole, like, Madame Malkins and all the crying.
Oh, Madame Puddyfoots?
Yes, Puddyfoots,
sorry. Like, the robe shop?
No, a different Madame. There's too many Madams.
But, Madame. There's no Quidditch in this film.
Oh, yeah.
Not one Quidditch.
God bless.
Because I was like, Ron's with them with the giant. Oh, there's no Quidditch. So you miss all the keeper malarkey.
Yep.
It's just weird. A Harry Potter film, no Quidditch.
Yeah.
You pointed out there's just no need for Grawp in this film. Get out.
Yeah. Like, the only reason he's in it is then so that there's the whole bit where then the rope is there and it's empty and then... But, like, you could have done it without. You could have just had her be like, oh, we're walking into the forest. Oh, and now there's the centaurs.
Yeah.
You didn't need the giant bit. Yeah, I would have rather had that time spent on plot.
Yeah. Or they could have come up with another way for them to escape Umbridge, like, for all I care. Like, it's it was just unnecessary to have
it
that whole
bit. It wasn't needed
in
the book. It wasn't needed in the film.
Yeah. And then they add in this whole thing of Hermione being a better character than she is in the books and being all perfect and removing all her flaws, because Grawp actually physically picks her up and she's like, put me down. In the book, she loses her shit.
Yeah.
She just completely is like a sobbing mess and Harry has to be like, we're fine. You're fine.
Yeah.
Here, Ron's trying to help her and she's like, I'm going to save the day. Fuck off, Hermione.
Yeah, it's very like hashtag girl boss.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
But they just... Okay, so we were kind of playing a slight game of how many lines does Rupert Grint have during this film? Oh, yeah.
Not many.
And like, I stopped counting, but it's at least a 4-to-1 ratio between him and Emma.
Oh, yeah, I would say...
But that's
because
they use Hermione as just an exposition machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She just says things that the audience needs to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they give Ron's good lines to her.
Mm.
And then they make Hermione braver and funnier and more powerful when Ron is braver than her and, like, funnier than her in the books.
It's annoying because she was such, like, a fucking, like... She was not a subtle actress in this. Mm. Slash anything. It's just... She was just so over the top and, like, pantomime with it.
Yeah.
And it's like the directors and stuff were like, this is good acting. Emma Watson can act. When actually Ron's a good actor because it's more... Rupert Grint's a good actor because it's more understated.
Yeah.
He's so good at those, like, subtle facial expressions.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, everything that Emma Watson does is so, look at me, I'm Hermione, like, really theatrical. And it's like they took that big acting and they were like, this is good acting. Let's give her all of the lines and all of the spotlight. When actually Rupert Grint runs circles around her in terms of acting ability.
Yeah.
But they just really minimised his role.
Yeah. And then I feel like it almost reflects in the actors as well, because Rupert Grint does the least of the kind of Harry Potter thing, and like with this like back to Hogwarts thing, people were kind of like, oh, you know, he's talking the least and not joining in the most. I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if it's because of how the film's treated his character. Like, he's perfectly aware he was hard done by compared to like how Emma was treated and lines given and stuff like that. So, and it just gets worse and worse each film.
Mm-hmm.
We get the memory scene with Snape's memory of Harry's dad, but it is so short and so unnecessary to the overall plot of the film. I don't know why it was in here. It lasts 30 seconds. It's just Harry's dad being like, nah, ha, ha, I want to remove Snivelly's pants. It done.
Yeah.
Why is it in there?
There's nothing, there's no like repercussions.
Nope.
There's no Harry dealing with it. There's no the explanation. So all it does is just set it up to make it look like Harry's dad was a bully, and then it's...
But then Harry doesn't deal with that. He doesn't run to Sirius and ask him about it.
Yeah, which again then makes Sirius's death less impactful, because it, like, you don't get a lot of Harry really leaning on Sirius throughout the films like you do in the books.
It almost makes that line at the end, like, nice one, James, which was a really clever line to add, worse, because we now think that James is a dick and we never get that resolved at all.
Yeah.
It was just really stupid that they bothered to put it in there because it was 30 seconds.
Mm.
Fred and George would not have interrupted exams.
Mm.
They just wouldn't have. They didn't want to interrupt the OWLs in the books. They were better than that.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to ask about that. Did they just get full on expelled after that whole stunt?
Well, no, that was them leaving.
They quit.
Yeah.
I was thinking that because they were saying their whatever ambitions lie outside of academia or whatevs.
Yeah. They're just done.
I was thinking they're just like throwing away their time at Hogwarts.
Yes.
Intentionally. They go and start a joke shop.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. I liked it. I believe you when you say that they wouldn't have interrupted the exams, but I don't know that. And the Fred and George in the films, I like them. I think that's pretty cool of what they did.
I think I prefer Fred and George in the films to in the books.
What? How?
In the books, they can just be really dodgy bullies.
Yeah.
They do a lot of dodgy things in the books.
But I like the fact they're like, they're morally ambiguous because the books are longer and we get the time for that.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't know. I don't feel like the books are critical of Fred and George. I feel like they're like, here's Fred and George doing some really horrible things. Isn't it funny? And it's not critical of it.
Yeah.
So far in my experience of the book, there's a lot of that though, because like Ron and Harry like say things that are supposed to be seen as like friendly banter, where it's actually just being really horrible and bullying Hermione.
Yep.
And it's like, lol, no, that's just how kids are. It's fine.
Yeah.
That's just how boys are. Cope with it, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's fucked.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
So Harry has the vision about Sirius. And he's like, Hermione, we need to hurry. We need to go to Umbridge's fire. And they start running. And then the next scene starts and they're in different clothes.
Yeah. They just went and got changed.
We have to go save Sirius, but I'm not doing it in this tie.
I can only think the reason they wanted to do this is they didn't want them in their Hogwarts unit. But then the lack of four
It just reads like a continuity error.
Yeah, it looks like they've done something wrong because they're we're in such a rush.
It looks like they did like the Superman like running, undoing the tie and then...
Honestly, I would have rather have seen that than the ridiculousness of like, the way it reads.
Tear open their Hogwarts shirt and send like a logo. It's just like this fucking thatch jumper.
I just wrote the slap because it made me gasp like... a lot.
You had a visceral reaction to that slap.
Because I didn't know. I forgot it was coming. Like, it's not in the book. She just full on whacks him around the face.
That's assault.
I liked it. It was just kind of, well.
No. Anna's way too into this slap.
No, because she just like lost it, you know? She'd cracked.
All right. I'm kink shaming.
Well, she has dom energy. We've discussed this.
Oh, she absolutely. She's
with the pen. Like,
she's
you deserve
a sadist.
To be punished.
She's got a knife kink. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She's
mummy,
absolutely.
Sorry, mummy. Sorry, mummy.
Okay, so they go to the forest. The centaurs run off Umbridge. Then they arrive back at the bridge to meet up with the others.
Oh, yeah.
To go back to the forest thestrals. To get the... What?
I didn't even pick up on that. That's...
Why didn't they meet them in the...
They just... I feel like a set designer made this bridge and was so proud of this bridge and it's just included in the films constantly and it's like, what is this bridge?
I don't get your issue with the bridge.
Because it's just, like, I don't understand where this bridge is going.
To the ground.
It's just in the films a disproportionate amount when there's not, a single mention of a bridge in the books.
There isn't.
No, there's no bridge.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like, I just feel like they made this bridge and they were like, it's a really fucking nice bridge. Let's put this in the films or wherever. To the point when then they're making them go out of the woods to the bridge and then go back into the
because
woods.
Because they even say the line, how much further into the forest, implying they've been walking into the forest for quite a long time, then they have to walk back out the forest, get back up to the bridge, then walk back into the forest to get the thestrals.
It also makes it weirder that they would think to use the thestrals, because in the film, in the book, they think to use the thestrals because they appear. And they're like, oh.
In this, it's like, Luna's like, we'll fly, of course.
Yeah.
Why? You're on the bridge, you're close to Hogwarts, and Umbridge has been driven away. Go back and use her bloody fire.
Exactly. Yep.
I wrote missing out Dom, so disappointing. I meant Department of Mysteries. I was trying to do shorthand.
Yeah, I had that note. There's an entire chunk where in the Department of Mysteries they go through loads of different rooms and it's really fucking good. And they just missed it out. It's just the Department of Mysteries only has prophecies in.
Yeah.
And a curtain.
That's literally what I thought the Department of Mysteries
was. No. There's so much more and they really go through all of these different...
It's meant to be a department that's exploring basically every element of magic and how it works and the six of them end up getting lost in there and seeing all these things they shouldn't see.
And it's all mysterious and loads of weird shit and shit that's never fully explained. You'll love it when you read it.
You know I love that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And honestly, it's a Connor chapter all over. And then in this it's just the Department of Mysteries, we've got some orbs and a curtain
and we've got a door that leads and we've got a door that leads to an 100-foot drop
for no reason.
Don't worry though, you'll be fine. You'll stop a foot off the
ground.
There's
like a cushioning thing. Yeah. We won't explain why.
We just couldn't afford the stairs. So we enchanted it.
The stairs are actually being cleaned right now. They're normally there.
So then they get there. Harry walks to row 97. Sirius isn't there. And then from five rows back, Neville goes, oh, Harry, there's a prophecy with your name on. What? The whole point was them being led to row 97 because the orb was on the corner of
And it's also, the moment when... It's just Sirius isn't there. Oh, by the way, there's a... they don't spend any time on that moment of Harry being no, fuck, what have I done?
Yeah.
It's just oh, Sirius isn't there. Oh, what's this cool orb?
And then the orb starts... auto-playing!
Literally, when you're scrolling Netflix trying to decide what to play and then it annoyingly starts auto-playing, which, my God, I wish you could turn off. It's, I feel stressed when I browse Netflix.
No, same, I don't like it.
I want to just be able to pause and think and read, but you have to constantly keep moving or shit starts auto-playing. It's so stressful. Netflix, if you're listening to this, shut that shit down. But anyway, why does the prophecy start auto-play?
So, Harry hears the prophecy before the big showdown.
Yeah.
And all his friends hear it too. And yet the showdown plays out in the same way.
Yeah, and they're trying to get the prophecy, but if the Death Eaters were there invisible, they would have just heard it. So
And, like, the whole point is Harry tries to protect this prophecy not because he knows what it says, but because it's the only thing keeping his friends alive.
Yeah.
So he actually doesn't care. He doesn't care if it smashes. He doesn't want to hear it. It's just a protective thing for his friends. But now he hears it and he's like, I don't want to give it to them because it's about me.
Mine.
And I know this. Mine.
Like, oh, no.
And it just spoils the ending. I wrote in big capitals the line, nice one, James. What a great addition from the scriptwriter. Wow.
Yeah.
I was only thinking about that line the other day, like outside of this, that I love that. That just like tugs on a very specific heartstring.
Yeah, I think it's because like the book does it in a lot of like very subtle ways.
Yes.
And like other characters making passive aggressive remarks about it and stuff. But then it's not included in the film, so they had to find a way to just like throw it out there.
And they did such a good job.
Yeah, they did.
Like it hurts. Yeah. It hurt me deep inside.
Yeah.
Very good. There's an actual killing curse.
Mm.
Bellatrix casts the Vada Kedavra.
I don't like the way that they do Sirius's death. I think I just prefer it in the film when it's all, he's kind of like battling her and gloating and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, again, they try and go too big with the deaths in Harry Potter. It's like, I would have liked it if he literally fell through the curtain like someone would fall, and it's just that he didn't appear on the other side.
And it's also like, what was the point in the curtain even being in the scene if Bellatrix is going to Avada Kedavra him, because he would have been dead anyway. So the curtain
then
loses all meaning.
Yeah, then you lose all of Harry's grief where he's like, but all he did was fall through a curtain. What do you mean he's dead?
Yeah.
Like, because for Connor's benefit in the book, there's no killing curse. He just falls through the curtain and doesn't come out the other side.
And it's not like this curtain where he's like transported to heaven. He falls backwards, but his body doesn't appear the other side.
Yeah.
And that's
all Harry knows.
And then Harry just like tries to go through because he's just like trying to go after wherever Sirius has gone, and other people have to hold him back. And they're like, no, he's dead.
Right.
And Harry's like,
So this big archway thing is called what? I remember it had a very specific name.
Well, we never really find out.
Oh.
The death curtain. No, it's not called that.
I had it in my head that it was called The Veil for some reason.
Is called The Veil and Beyond the Veil.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I'm assuming that I will learn a lot more about what that is and what it does.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
More than the film tells us.
Yeah. But it's also meant to be like left up to your interpretation of death and the afterlife.
Okay,
yeah.
JK.
But we have like a very good theory about it, which is, I think we're right.
Yeah. The post-ministry Dumbledore scene is shit. It's 30 seconds and it's just like, I know how you feel. No, you don't. The prophecy said one of us has to kill the other. Yep. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah.
30 pages that we analyse just to be like, okay.
Doesn't explain any of the backstory, any of the motivations, any of the context, anything what's going on,
Harry's
anything
anger.
That's going to happen.
Harry doesn't throw or smash one single thing.
I know! It's like,
show Daniel Radcliffe smashing some things!
Yeah, that would be hot.
Again, why did you include it? I'm bored. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yep.
And then they kind of go for the classic Harry Potter post film to melancholy ending where it's like, bad things have happened, but we've got each other. Camera rises, music swells.
Yeah. They
Hedwig
flies
overhead.
Can we talk about the cinematography, aka the film production that for some reason we originally called cinematography?
And now we're stuck with it.
Yep. Which hopefully Connor can speak again, because you didn't have a lot to say about adaption, obviously.
I had one single note about cinematography.
Yeah.
And it's in the beginning, because that's while I still cared about taking notes.
Okay.
It's just with the bit with Dudley in the playground. Mm-hmm. It's because I've had to do like editing before, so I appreciate this, the color correction.
Oh, yeah.
That as soon as the weather starts changing, it goes from an orange tint to a blue tint. It's just really nice.
I think you will find the official term for that blue tint is the twilight blue tint. Because it's what they do in the fucking Twilight films.
For one thing, I don't believe you that's the official
name. That's the official industry term.
Yeah. Twilight was that iconic that now any blue tint, it's the Twilight blue tint.
When films were using blue tint before Twilight came out, they just knew it was going to happen eventually.
Exactly. It was like a heavy tint. Like, it was like very orange and then very blue.
Yeah, it's strange because like the orange makes it look like it's in the midst of summer and that like they are baking. thing. And well, it probably is, you're right.
But yeah. Then the Dementors ruin
and
it.
Then it's piss and rain 5 minutes later.
Yeah, I did have like a note that I really like the way that they kind of showed like a kind of like middle class but shitty in that it's just so like dreary, like
it's
housing
bland.
Estate. It's like bland. It literally that looks like the housing estate near where I grew up.
Yeah,
like,
and that park looks like those parks you get sandwiched between housing estates that you hang out in summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something I noticed for the first time in this, which I thought was so clever, but so it must be so subtle because I'd never thought about it before. So Harry's sitting on the swing and he's watching the roundabout. And the roundabout, when the wind picks up, starts to turn ever so slightly. And when Harry first saw Sirius in film three... That same a different roundabout turned slightly before he spun around and saw Sirius behind him, and he's acting all. And then he puts his head down and he's like clearly thinking about Sirius. And I was like, oh, all right, very good with that little roundabout thing.
Yeah,
that's cool. Those things are put into films very much so that you can just have those moments where you're like, ah, oh, clever.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. This film clearly came out in the shaky cam era because we get some great shaky cam. Mm. Do you remember when like that was the thing in film? Like Hunger Games was like, I'm going to shaky cam the shit out of this. Mm-hmm. I think this must have been in the same era because Harry and Dudley are running and I'm like, mm-hmm. I wrote, how dare they dress Sirius so fit? What was the costume designer doing?
Mm. I had a random note before this with the Dementors thing. I never noticed before, but there is a whip noise sound effect when Harry goes to like curse the Dementor away, which one, what was that curse? But it literally goes whoosh.
Wait, hang on, did he curse the Dementor?
He kind of, it's weird because he kind of pulls his wand out and then does something and then the Dementor goes and then he does the...
I didn't notice.
I thought he just like literally jammed his wand into the side of this thing's head.
Yeah, that's kind of what he does, and there's kind of a spark and just like a whoosh noise.
I didn't hear the whoosh
noise. So it's kind of like he did a bit of like weird stunny thing, but yeah, it goes whoosh. I never noticed it before until I was like... Mm.
There's a little red spark as well.
So that's kind
Maybe
of like
he
a stun.
He whipped the Dementor.
Yeah, but yeah, just the whoosh. It's like, you know, when you have that iPhone app, back when iPhones were really old.
Oh,
and it was like,
yeah.
Oh, the same kind of thing where you'd have the beer app and you're like...
Yeah.
That was the real magic.
Honestly, apps should just go back to that.
Yeah. It was a simpler time.
We don't need
the light
Candy Crush.
App. Yeah. Where there was just a lighter on
the
phone.
We had the gun. We had the gun where like you can like load it and then you pretend to do a recoil with your hand and it goes bang, and it was very cool.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was the costume designer thinking?
Stripes. This entire film.
Yes, I also wrote stripy t-shirts.
The amount of cute matching stripy t-shirts that Ron and
Hermione wore. That was
so
intentional.
Many.
They were like, they're starting to fancy each other, so
but
we're going to put
overall,
them in stripy t-shirts.
Everyone in stripy t-shirts. The Weasley twins in a lot of stripy t-shirts. Like, just stripes.
Apart from Harry,
film.
Who's constantly in block colours, which is another cool way to separate him. Everyone else is bright and colourful and patterned, and Harry is always wearing a blue or a red t-shirt.
Yeah. I will say, I think this is my favourite film for, like, the way the uniforms are done. I think they look very good in this film.
They do look very good. They're, like... customized, but not quite as much as film three. Yeah, they're very good. And then Sirius has an array of velvet smoking jackets.
Yes, because that's what you buy when you can't have access to your bank account and you're in hiding after getting out of prison for 12 years. You get yourself some velvet smoking jackets.
And waistcoats with pocket watches.
Yep, and you get yourself some wax to curl up your moustache.
I don't see why you have a problem with this. That's exactly what I would do.
With what money?
Well, I don't know. You said yourself Creature could go and get it for him.
Maybe, but that seems a bit sus.
Lupin can go get it for him. But Sirius gives him no money to buy better clothes himself because Lupin looks shit in this film.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, they just really went ham on how fit they wanted to make him in this film.
The
then
direction
they were like,
was respect the drip.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. And then they were like, and now have him hold a glass and have him
and
wink.
And like say Harry weird for the toast as if he like has some extra authority to it. I don't know.
There was some production assistant there going, does anyone remember this is a kid's film? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's like a whole...
weird, like, homoerotic, forbidden love kind of...
You search for
side
that.
...side plot. No!
You do.
I'm sorry. All of the, like, long stares and the winking and the,
no,
like...
I'm sorry. When he's kind of half ignoring Molly and Arthur, and then Sirius from behind goes... Well, if it isn't Harry Potter, and Molly and Arthur have to get out of the way because Harry sprints out of hugging, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's so bi. Honestly. Like, it's not me looking for it. This is like...
It's 100% you looking for it.
No,
I've never
it's there.
Picked up on
it's
that.
There. No, it's like, it's weird.
Can it not be like a kid who has never felt a connection to family... Now with a family member that he truly respects
okay.
and cares about.
You have not read the books.
No, I haven't.
The amount of times in the books that Harry is like, and then Sirius was there. Sirius is so hot. Sirius, just gorgeous. Sirius is so fit. Sirius is just the best looking man anyone has ever seen.
I mean, Harry doesn't quite use these, you know, colloquial phrases.
I was gleaning,
but the
yeah.
amount of time that the word handsome and yeah. Sirius are together is egregious.
It's like Sirius can't be mentioned from Harry's point of view without the word handsome. Like, it's just...
I don't know. I want to keep it just wholesome.
Did we want to drink the weird Guinness and blackcurrant thing you made?
You can do it. Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Let's give it a go.
This is probably a bit more acceptable in Irish circles. It's
really?
Just, yeah. This is a Guinness and black. So it's Guinness and blackcurrant cordial. Just sort of makes it a bit more palatable.
Oh!
Nope, makes it worse.
Really?
It tastes like I have drunk a load of Guinness, gone home, drunk a load of squash, realised I need to vomit,
yeah.
and vomited a mixture of them both back
That's
up.
That's exactly what it tastes like.
That's good. That's good. That's exactly the reaction that most people would want, I'd say.
What did we all think of the way they did the ministry?
Yeah, it's good. It's impressive. Like, it's better than it being like a fucking town hall.
Yeah, I like the way that I think I read, and I think it looks like that they made it look like an old-fashioned underground station with like the curves.
Yeah,
and like the green tile that you see in like some of the central underground stations, and I think that's like so cool.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense as well. It's kind of the like implication that they took over some tunnels.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because
like,
let's face it, wizards cannot.
We just can't build for shit.
No.
Also, they've just got a giant poster of Fudge. I'm like, all right.
Yeah, I was thinking, how weird would it be if he walked into like the House of Parliament and there was just a giant canvas of Boris?
Yeah, there probably like, is. We don't
there
know.
There probably is.
Yeah. I have been inside Parliament, but when... I think when Theresa was Prime Minister.
Was there a giant... like tapestry?
No, but a fun fact about the inside of Parliament, it's extremely disorientating purposefully, so if a gunman or terrorist gets into the building, they cannot work out where anyone's office is.
Oh.
Because I was like, where the hell am I? The corridors look like they repeat, you can't tell where the stairs... It's weird in there. Like, it's really weird to disorientate any intruders.
So what you're saying is whoever designed the Houses of Parliament's watched Grey's Anatomy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's impressive in an old building that they then managed to do that. But yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Umbridge's outfits, costuming.
Pink.
Okay, so like the films are more and more doing that thing where they're like, we're going to pick and choose who wears robes and who doesn't.
Mm.
Like, she's wearing tailored suits, but I love the way they look like pink versions of Thatcherite outfits.
Yes. Yeah. It's good, very weaponized femininity. Like, you can definitely tell that the costume designers had fun.
Yeah.
I love that it's like she changes them because there's a lot of like Umbridge montage and she will change outfit in everyone, but you can barely tell because they're all so similar but different. So it's really good fun. If you like watch that montage just paying attention to Umbridge's costumes,
yeah,
it's really good.
And it's like 80s power suits, which is great because that's when it was like women entering the workforce, but then they turn it like all pink and fluffy. Like, it's the costumes at the department had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, they definitely did.
Did she have a brooch with a cat on it?
Yeah.
I thought I picked that up. That's the first time I noticed that today watching it.
It's funny because like cats. all her like cat plates just remind me of my evil nana used to just have not cat plates but just loads of decorative plates everywhere.
Like China.
Yeah, and she was evil.
Decorative plates are a weird choice. I'm like, what? You don't eat off them.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Luna has fake feet on her feet. What? Okay. So I've met Nick Dudman, who was the prosthetic artist in Harry Potter, because he was a patron at my university. And one thing he told us, one of the
like came when he came around and like talked to some people, is that scene where she's in the thestrals, she's wearing prosthetic feet over her feet because they were filming for outdoors for so long and they didn't want it to be her real feet because A, she'd freeze, and B,
people would masturbate to
exactly
her feet.
So yeah, she's wearing a prosthetic foot over her feet
because that'll stop people masturbating to it. Yeah,
but it will stop her getting cold.
Yeah. Ooh, they achieve that, but yeah, like there are many foot fetishists out there that won't know their prosthetics,
but at least,
or they'll like that they
yeah,
are they
yeah but at least it's not Ivana Lynch's real feet.
Mm. Yep, you cannot show feet for free.
But that's a great, I just love that fact. Like, it was just one of my favourite weird things I've found out about Harry Potter. And I'm like, some prosthetic artists would have worked on those for months. That would have taken a month's worth of work.
Do you reckon they based it off her actual feet? Yes. Or they just went with generic foot?
No, I think they would have done a cast of her foot and adapted the cast of her foot to be a second foot, like a foot sock.
I really wish that they had literally just gotten socks, dyed them flesh colour, and like drew on toes.
And then they could do the same thing with shoes. So that she's got foot shoes over foot socks on her feet.
Yeah. Just laser foot.
Yeah. What if her jacket looked like a foot?
What if Luna was just a giant plastic foot?
I mean, you want her to be weird, so she's just
a talking foot.
You're just as sane as I am, and just like the toes wiggling.
But then she's also wearing like a foot necklace and like... Yeah. This film has so many montages.
Oh, yeah.
It takes the concept of montages.
Yeah. It's basically just a montage in a film.
Yeah.
The entire film is just a really long fucking montage.
And I like the way that they show the school year passing really effectively, because I think what some of the Harry Potter films fail on is like showing that there's 9 or 10 months.
Yeah.
But like, there was at least 3 montages that went on for about 5 minutes. I was like, okay, yeah, okay, we're still going.
Yeah, with all the peppy fucking music.
Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum.
Well, like, with exactly Umbridge imposing her will around the school, yep, like, that does drag a bit.
Yeah, it does. It's like, we get the picture.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken away the death pendulum in this film. So in the scene where Sybil's getting fired, in that courtyard in film 3, there was the giant death pendulum.
Yeah.
But then it came back in the OWL scene and it's behind Umbridge. So they clearly store this giant death pendulum for when they need it.
Yeah.
Film 3, you know, they've got just a giant pendulum swinging for no particular reason at perfect height to kill many students.
Film 3?
Film 3.
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But...
big pendulum that's going to kill some people.
Why am I not remembering this?
You probably just need to rewatch it.
Maybe, yeah.
It's one of those things which you don't notice because it just looks cool and aesthetic, and then someone will point it out and it's like, that would kill a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, it's just at, like, this height.
You could say that about so many things in Hogwarts, though.
Oh, we cover this a lot. Like,
wait.
There is no health and safety.
I can imagine how...
Dumbledore's death quota.
Yeah, because we say that there's, like, a certain quota every year of, like, okay, we're going to lose, like, X percentage of students to the Forbidden Forest, X amount to the staircases, X amount to Hagrid's monstery things.
Yep. And, X amount to just Dumbledore, like, forgetting people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Various wand accidents, I'm sure.
Yeah.
For first years that don't know how to use them.
And wand masturbation-related accidents.
But yeah, probably. I also hate the way the staircases move. I think it's the stupidest interpretation of moving staircases I've ever seen in my life. But they're just at the perfect height for a first year to just run off the end and plunge to their death.
I mean, I have just horrible images of getting stuck between the staircase and where it's supposed to meet. Like, if you were to step off a second early, then you're, like, crushed in between.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's what J.K. Rowling meant by moving staircases. No, but
you could do
whatever.
So much more aesthetically with that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Why is Hogsmeade suddenly on a random clifftop? And where
how
is
did
this...
they get there? I like the fact there's a massive fuck-off bridge, but does it lead to the village that's, on a random cliff? No!
Also...
where does the bridge lead?
The station where they come into is Hogsmeade Station, but that clifftop does not have a station on it.
No!
But it's also not a whole village. It's now just the high street perched on top of a cliff.
And it's never has been done like that in the other films. doesn't make
sometimes
any sense.
Sometimes they make decisions. Mm. The jumper game in this film is strong.
Mm.
Great jumpers.
Yeah.
I know we were just complaining about the score, the bit that goes dun 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 dun, but I really like the score they made for when the DA are like starting and like they feel like when they've decided to do it and they're walking along the bridge and they're like, yeah, we can do this, we can rise up, and it's like, oh, how does that one go? It's like,
yeah, I was gonna say, I have to request that you
that one is great. I love that one.
I only mentioned the score to you during the film that like when Harry hits Bellatrix with the Cruciatus first, and she's like on the ground. You can hear like a cello, I think, just going like, and it's really like foreboding, like Harry's turning bad, he's gonna kill her, just kind of weird shit.
Because you're a little bitch for sound design, aren't you?
I am, because then like Dumbledore shows up and there's a big swell, and as soon as the fight starts, all the music cuts out. It's fucking brilliant. I adore that scene so much.
Yeah.
I do think it's amazing because I don't in some ways know how they do scores, because like surely you have to have the final edit of the film before they score it entirely, because like it fits so perfectly to every tiny moment.
But they'd have a storyboard, I think, so they'd have a vague idea of what the shots are going to be,
right?
And then when they when the actual editing process comes in and they have the score, then they would do like the little minutia of sort of having the beats hit these exact points and the actors acting.
Okay. Because I've definitely seen footage before, not necessarily potentially with Harry Potter, but definitely with something of essentially a guy playing the film on a big screen and just having shit around to just do like the
Foley.
Walking.
Oh, Foley,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, like doing all of that. I've so I guess that is from like the final edit or like close to final.
Yeah.
Like they might do a rough cut, do the sounds, and then...
Foley artists are amazing.
I'd love to do that. That must be so much fun.
And it's the weirdest objects that make the most mundane sounds. It's bizarre.
I remember seeing this like quite early on. Did you see the Men in Black movies?
No.
I think it was the second one, the woman that has like vines in her fingers. The way they did that was just a guy pulling masking tape. Like that
sound. How do you work out like, oh, that noise sounds like that knowledge is just amazing.
Can I just say that was a very good masking tape impression?
Very impressive.
Thank you. I could be a Foley artist just with my voice.
Just with your voice.
You do make a lot of weird noises.
A lot of them. Don't make me do one.
Do one. He does that all the time.
That was weird.
Thank
it's
you.
So weird.
I liked it.
Wait, hang on.
Why?
I can do the two of them at the same time.
It's so odd.
Yeah, that was funny. So someone in the set design was like, what if we lined the whole of the Room of Quiet with mirrors? Which I know from reading things about the film that they then had to spend over a year editing the crew out of every reflection in every shot they did, because they were real mirrors. Why would you do that to yourselves?
No. Like, it doesn't even look that good.
A year of people just editing crew out of the background.
It doesn't look that good. It also wouldn't be that practical.
No.
Like...
No. Were they never described as mirrors in the books?
No.
It's just a cool room.
Yeah.
It's just like a big classroom.
I feel like it was really underwhelmingly done in the film. I feel like it's so exciting the way that it's described in the book of like how, you know, loads of pillows and stuff will appear when they need like things to land
and
on.
And
yeah, like it actually has like practical resources. And in the film, it's just like this bare room with a load of mirrors. It feels more like a dance studio than
It does feel like a dance studio, yeah. Maybe that's what they were going for. Harry is wearing a cardigan while he teaches the DA because Lupin used to wear a cardigan when he taught.
Wasn't that Dan Rad's input?
Was it?
I can't remember if Dan suggested it or Dan really liked it, but yeah, it was definitely Dan that brought it up in an interview.
Yeah, I swear it was his idea.
I think it might have been.
I think they like kind of said to him, like, here's a bunch of costumes, and he picked that.
Yeah, because Lupin wore cardigans during his teaching scenes. But then I also noticed that they put Neville in sweater vests, and the photo of his daddy's wearing a sweater vest.
Yeah.
So, like, that's really cute as well, just, like, jumper continuity.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the family tree in Sirius's house a real tree?
I like it. It's funny. It's like they just took it way too literally. It's like someone made it that had never been told what a family tree was. So they just made an actual tree and then showed it off really proudly, and everyone was like,
oh, amazing!
I like the fact that the faces on the tree, everyone except for Bellatrix, looks like a Renaissance painting.
Yeah, but then Bellatrix is like a... It's like when you get a photo, when you do one of those apps that like paints a photo
for you. I noticed that as well. Like everyone is kind of like not realistic.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to pick that
person
out
of a lineup.
They're
a bit like cherubby, and then it's just like literally just Bellatrix because it was like the one that had been cast.
Yeah.
Mm.
The CGI on Grawp is so bad.
So bad.
I don't get why, because like we had good CGI in the last few films, so I don't know why we're now going backwards.
Yeah, but again, they didn't need to put him in.
No.
So
did they just like not finish him properly? Like he looks shit.
Yeah, it's weird. But again, could have been done really well with like a mixture of practical effects and CGI, but they just CGI'd it.
Well, that's where I think it's bad, because all the other creatures we've seen up until this point, they've mixed practical and CGI in this. They were like, let's do the whole thing in CGI.
I feel like at that time, it was quite challenging to make like a humanoid purely out of CGI, like to have realistic facial expressions and their movements to look fluid enough. Like,
well, that's the thing. He's more humanoid than anything else they've done before. Yeah. Like, so it is harder.
And it'd be so much harder to make anything practical for that scale of a person they're trying to put it in.
Yeah.
I'd forgive them a bit for that CGI, but it does look shit.
Yeah, it does.
I had never realised how good the editing of Alan Rickman into the Mirror of Erised scene was until my DVD jumped and we all got confused and thought we were watching film one.
It was so weird. It just like skipped mid-thing and we were like, oh, it skipped. And then we were like, to a different film.
They did it so well. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that's good. Like, that's good.
Yeah. Maybe they just went back in time.
With magic.
Magic.
I would like to take that bit of Snape going, I may vomit, and just put him in the background of various different scenes of all the films.
Yeah.
Even after he's dead.
Oh my God, edit it into the background of like...
Cho and Harry kissing.
Or I was going to say Ron and Lavender kissing.
Yes.
Oh, or no, the big scene, the big scene where Ron and Hermione kiss. He's in the fucking Chamber of Secrets.
I may vomit.
At that point, he is dead.
Yeah. So they're like, ah, Jesus, Snape's alive.
It will annoy me for the rest of my life that in the stupid flashback scene, which they did for no reason because it was only 30 seconds long, to Harry's dad, that they didn't put prosthetics on Dan Rad. So they've spent 5 films going, you look just like your father. You look almost identical to your father. Wow, you look a lot like James. And then they have 15-year-old James and 15-year-old Dan Rad. Yep. And instead of having some fun and putting some prosthetics on Dan Rad to make him look ever so slightly different, like weirdly different, like the nose is, a bit too long. Oh, put a wig on him so his hair is like a 70s cut. They pick this like actor that looks nothing like Dan Rad.
It's just, he's white, he's brunette.
And they've put round glass and just... It would have been so much fun.
It would have been really like, you could have like slightly moved the cheekbones up.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
They could have had so much fun. Like the way that in film 7, they did a really good job on the actor that plays Aberforth, putting prosthetics on him to make him look more like Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Just stupid, just really stupid decision.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I really like slow-mo in this film.
Yeah.
Okay, so when Harry has his vision, he like starts going in slow-mo as he's like, oh, a vision of Sirius. And then it suddenly goes fast as he falls.
Yeah.
It's just really cool. And then they do the best slow-mo thing when Harry sees Sirius die.
Yeah.
But slow it down even more. It's so good.
Yeah, but then I hate the kind of weird way they have Sirius like float through the veil in slow-mo and it just looks shit.
I hate that. I like the slow-mo on Harry.
Yeah, I know, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then speaking of things that look shit, what the fuck is going on with the Death Eater's black smokey appearing? You made this even worse for us, right, by saying at the beginning of the film, why are Fred and George appearing like that? Because apparition at the beginning of the film is shown in Fred as George being like, pop-ing, pop. They're not even doing a little spin. They're like, pop,
yeah,
pop. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the film, we've got people like...
Yeah.
But then it's established it's not a Death Eater thing because the Order appear in clouds of white smoke.
And this is, I think this is what annoys me even more. It's like,
I wouldn't love the Death Eaters doing it, but I could at least be like, maybe they've been taught like a way of doing it, some like dark magic from Voldemort, and that's why it looks like it. But it's then when the Order do it, and it's so heavy-handed for a start, the way the Death Eaters do it, and it's all in black, and then it's not only white weird smoke stuff when it's the Order, the good guys, but there's also weird angelic lighting going on.
Yeah, because the only way you know that Sirius has arrived, I notice in this watching, is Harry's face literally lights up because the light of Sirius arriving has hit him.
It's so weird. And it's like, one, surely they can't apparate in there.
You would think.
Like, surely there would be spells to prevent that. Or why, like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, surely you can't apparate in there. So what, were they invisible? And then they're like, telling it, but it just seems so, like, lame to be like, oh, the bad guys do this swooshy thing in black and then the good guys do it in white with this angelic...
Is it just a case of them wanting to do something aesthetic at the expense of the actual... making sense of the plot. Oh,
yeah. Well, yeah, because then not only are they apparating, at some points in that fight scene, they're flying around the room in clouds of smoke.
Yeah, they're just trying to make it look cool at the expense of sense.
But it annoys me when you break continuity. It's bad enough over the Harry Potter series, the amount of times they wanted to stylistically change the way things looked. Mm. But it was made over 10 years. Fine. But the fact that they stylistically change how apparating looks within the same film.
Yeah.
Like, when Fred and George had a popping noise, it was just, really stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think they can, like, there are different ways of apparating? That because Fred and George are, like, whimsical, they have this, like, abrupt comedic way of doing
it? It's just supposed to be that you appear.
You should spin.
Yeah, that's why I brought up at the beginning of it. That they, like, sort of come out as, like, ribbons.
You should
of themselves.
I picture you appear, but you're like mid-turn.
Yes. I picture when someone lands, they're kind of like, whoo!
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a spin.
Yeah. Like a spin.
Because you're supposed to spin, and that's how you do it.
Mm.
Smash all of the windows.
Is that the fight scene?
Yeah. Yeah. All of the tiling as well. They fuck up that tiling.
I adore that fight
scene. Is there like a wizard tiler? What are people that do tiling called? Like.
Is his name Tyler?
It's Tyler. It's Tyler the Tyler.
Yeah. Like Johnny Hot Tub.
I don't know. I can't remember what that's called.
But like...
Yeah, they'd have to get one in.
Yeah. And is that a wizard person or are they just like this muggle? They're like, just don't ask any questions.
Well, they bring him to the Ministry of Magic. Yeah, like, so, okay, listen.
Don't ask how these tiles got fucked up. Yeah. But don't ask about these magical fires people are stepping out of.
But I think if I remember rightly, that whole thing looks so cool because they really did blow out all the windows and they really did put explosives in the tiles.
Well, I think. Yeah.
So no wonder it looks so cool.
Yeah.
But also, you've only got one chance to do it. It's like, okay then.
Yeah.
I really like the way that they did the possession. And I think some people hate it.
I hate it.
Okay, I thought you did. Okay. Shall I go first with the like or do you want to go first with the hate?
I don't have any like... structured argument aside from I just don't think that Dan Rad's acting is really up to it.
Fair enough.
Are you saying that you like it in terms of the way it's edited and filmed?
Yeah, the way it's edited and filmed, the way they chose to show something which was in the books, 2 pages of Harry's thoughts within his own head, so it was going to be very difficult for them to show. So they chose to use all flashbacks from previous films in this film, and it starts off with like all the bad flashbacks and like the editing of that, and then you hear Voldemort's voice inside his head. And then I've always kind of hated the fact that the 5 friends show up unharmed to kind of watch this. But I realised for the first time why they do this, because Harry catches sight of them and that's what makes him realise, I want to stay alive because I love these people and I have the capacity to love. And when he looks at Ron and Hermione, he then has those flashbacks of Ron and Hermione.
Mostly Hermione. The shot is like 99% Hermione.
But that's why the laughing scene was in, that we were all taking the piss out of, so they could have that modern laughing scene. Mm. And then like he has the happy flashbacks of Sirius. And I think it was it's that thing again of them choosing a clever way to do something that was really well written, but would have been difficult to translate.
Yeah, I think how I would rather it, because I just hate the cheesy little speech that he does.
That's the bit I hate. So the only thing I hate about it is we didn't need Harry saying the words, I feel sorry for you because you'll never know friendship or love. I got that through the context of him seeing his friends, remembering Sirius in happy times, and Voldemort like face like
dropping and like him being forced, like I got that.
And it's like if they wanted to go more heavy handed with it, I would rather it been like a mental conversation in the head, like you hear the conversation that's going on between Voldemort and Harry, but in their head.
You could set it up as if they're in the same room.
Yeah. Like kind of, like battling for space in his brain.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I like how it kind of is in the book where it's like he kind of gets ejected because of this like feeling of love. So it's when Harry like sasses him out of there that it's like... Because I don't feel like in the book it's that much of a conscious thing that Harry does. I feel like he just feels the love and then...
Well, it's also they change it a bit because in the films he sees his friends and realises he wants to live because he loves them and that helps him remember the love he had for Sirius. In the books... He realizes because if Voldemort does kill him in this moment, that's okay because he'll be reunited with Sirius.
Mm.
And that love is so strong it forces Voldemort out. So it's a different interpretation of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that's the kind of thing that you get across to someone through the prose of writing, though.
Yeah.
There is no way you could really translate that without a cheesy dialogue.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a shame that that's the sort of thing that you can't adapt into film because that's good. I'm looking forward to reading
that. There you go. Mm. Oh, and then the last stuff is the page of miscellaneous plot
things. Which, like, we've covered some of mine. Where did the coat come from Sirius becomes not the dog?
Oh, God, yeah. Okay, so if he's naked, where did the coat come from?
Mm.
If he's not naked, if he was wearing the coat when he transformed, then he left the house only wearing a coat.
What, you guys don't do that?
But they've already established people transfigure wearing clothes because otherwise that gets fucking bizarre.
Yeah, with McGonagall. Yep, weird.
Why do the Dementors do jump scares now?
That jump scare is awful.
Unnecessary.
It's whatever they do with the audio design. It's like, sorry, I'm on about audio again, but like it's like 20% as loud as everything else in the film. It's just like, oh no. And then he's on the wall. Yeah. It's very underwhelming. I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I hate it. Harry has drawn more owls.
So sweet.
But he's drawn like 3 different owls.
None of them looked like Hedwig.
Do you think she gets jealous when he draws a different owl? She's like, who the fuck is this?
Also, why is this 15-year-old
just drawing owls?
Hedwig thinking it's like cheating. Like, is that how you wish I looked?
Brown and... Wait, that one's a different one. What's that one?
You said you liked the white.
Harry, that one's a boy owl.
I have to tell you something.
It's just the fact that they were like, oh, let's decorate Harry's room with pictures of owls, but it implies that Harry himself is
then someone on the set had to just draw a load of owls kind of badly.
They're really drawn by children. They're drawn by the production team's children. But it's the fact they did it in film too, which makes sense for a 12-year-old. Carries you through to this film with yet more pictures of owls.
And not only has he drawn them, he's then displayed them. It's not like he doodled some owls and then threw it in the bin.
He's actually proud of these.
He's really proud of his owls.
I mean, I don't want to discourage Harry from his art, but...
It's not like he's drawn, like, a load of his memories from Hogwarts because he doesn't have a camera, so maybe he draws all his friends or the castle or just owls.
This is only interest. I would love it if, like, at the end of the last film where he's like in his 30s with like kids, he like opens like a pocket watch and it's just a drawing of an owl.
Yeah, or he rolls up his sleeve and he's just got like a sleeve of owls.
But different owls.
But his pictures that he drew as a teenager, not actually photorealistic owls, just the ones of his wall.
They go home and he's just got his own room covered in owl drawings and Ginny is like, do you need anything?
It's just a white cell with just loads of fucking owls pinned to them.
He's actually like nuts. He's 100% clinically insane.
Like, you go into his house as an adult and the fridge is covered in pictures of owls. It's like, oh, did your kids do that? But he's like, no, these are my owls.
He's like, they wish.
Harry and Ginny go to fucking like marriage counselling and the therapist is like, so what brings you here? You know, is it the trauma or is it the PTSD? And Ginny's like, it's the fucking owls.
He keeps making me wear feathers.
He'd at least drawn a picture of his own owl.
This is new owl. What owls is he studying? Your phone.
Should have gone on to be a bird keeper, really.
Yeah.
He didn't need the wizarding world. He just needed to be introduced to his love of owls.
Oh, Harry.
Yeah. My next one was Neville should be able to see the Thestrals.
Yes.
When they're all just kind of waiting and Harry's like, oh, what is it? And then Neville's just stood there not saying anything.
Could it be implied that because Neville's like this awkward kid that he like doesn't want to say that he's weird as well to like point out that he can see it?
But it's just don't put him in the scene. Yeah. He didn't need to be there.
And then it's anything. The fact that Ginny isn't in the scene, so Hermione has to introduce Luke. It's a weird scene.
Yeah, it's literally they could have swapped Neville and Ginny and it would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they don't even talk about the fact that Luna's in the year below, so it implies that this lot have just been ignoring a girl in their year. So we were talking about how few lines Rupert Grint gets, but in that first DA meeting when they're in the pub, they make him sit down for the entire scene while Harry and Hermione stand so that he isn't even framed in the shot. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like,
yeah.
Just say you don't want him in it. It's fine. Yeah, well, it's not fine.
Just write him out.
Yeah. But I did like they kind of like went a bit heavy-handed with Ron and Hermione in film 3 and 4. Like they did some weird things that I really liked in this film, how they toned it back down and just kept filming them making eye contact behind Harry's back.
Yeah.
It was just a bit bizarre and kind of cute. Like there's a bit where Harry was wrapping up the DA for Christmas and they're just behind his head like...
They're doing like the office eyes.
Yeah. Mm.
The kiss made me kill myself.
Oh, God.
It's so awkward.
By their side.
They're so far apart. They're like, arms are to their sides. It's so awkward.
Next to the picture of her dead ex.
Yeah. Like,
I think even when I kiss someone for the first time, my arms automatically, like, touch them in some way.
That's why I feel like it's so uncomfortable. Because, like, you're going to instinctively do something with your hands. Doesn't matter what it is. The fact that they're doing nothing is just like surreal and hard to watch.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I'm not into it.
No.
But then, do you have to get specialist people in to direct 2 15-year-old actors to kiss?
What do you mean?
Like, who directs that?
I don't know.
You have to get another 15-year-old, so like you're not breaking any laws, I think.
Do you have to get like special adults in? Like,
special adults?
I don't know.
They have badges.
Like, did their parents have to be there?
No, I think you might have to have someone overage and underage, but I think 2 underage is just, I think, just
sort
fine.
Of let them at it, surely.
Well, they didn't look like they liked it.
No.
It didn't look like either of them had kissed before. But yeah, like you said, can't picture Dan Rad kissing ever. Just...
I need to watch that film, because I've watched one of his rom-coms, but I can't remember him kissing in that one. But he's done 2, and the other one, the woman that's in it is the one he's been with for 10 years. So surely they must have some chemistry in that. So I need to watch that one.
Yeah. I watched Guns Akimbo or whatever it is the other day, the one where his hands are guns.
I tried watching that and I couldn't get through it.
No, it was awful. Oh. It was so bad, but it was also just really funny. It's just like his guns, arms, hands thing.
His
wow.
guns, arms, hands.
Yeah.
Stay away from my guns, arms, hands.
This film just also sometimes did a really good job of being like, okay, this film is separate from the book and we're going to cut things out. And sometimes did a really bad job. Like the bit when they were like, Hagrid's back. Where at no point in the film previously had anyone said,
Hagrid's
not
here. Yeah.
So or even just like, prior in that film, no one mentioned that he was gone, did they?
No one did. And then like 2/3 of the way through their film, they're like, Hagrid's back. It's like, what?
Where was he?
Needed one. I'm wondering if there was a cut scene where they mentioned it and then they couldn't put it in anywhere else. So it's just like, oh, crap.
And that leads us into the raw meat thing.
Yeah. So much raw meat.
It's also the fact I had to ask what happened to him because he's wounded. Mm. You guys told me it was the giants, but like, you had to tell me that. The film didn't tell me that.
No. Yeah.
The film did as little with the grop thing as possible, which is a good thing, but also just cut it out.
Yeah, just cut it out, literally. Mm. Yeah.
It was all mine.
Save the budget on the CGI.
Yeah.
Is that it? Are we done?
Did you have any more notes?
No.
Great. We do have a big question, though.
Oh, yes. I saw this.
Do we have any overall things about the film? Connor, why is this your favourite film?
It is just for the sound design.
Okay. That's such a nerdy answer.
It is, though, because, like, I mean, there are other films in the franchise that I love for different reasons, but, I mean, I even pointed it out with the Thestrals, right? Like, the noises that they make. You need to wonder what actual sound from the real world did they use and warp into whatever the sound the Thestrals make. Yeah.
It's me.
It was just somebody doing Hannah. That.
Yeah. Not someone. Me.
Specifically Hannah, even though she would have been a child.
I am... I don't have good reasons for this being my favourite. I'm a simp for a good fight scene.
Mm.
And, like, two superpowers, like Voldemort and Dumbledore, like, that's just cool.
Yeah.
But then that's full of awesome audio design. Like, when... It's that last spell before he shatters the glass. Voldemort, he's got, like, all that black, dark magic looking like it's being pulled into him. You can hear, like, a whooshing and then a whistle. And then it goes dead silent and it all explodes. Like, there was... somebody or a team of people that sat down to design that for very clear reasons in their heads, and to us it just sounds great. It's like 2 seconds of something that's cool, and
yeah,
I don't know, that resonates with me. I love it.
Cool. I think that's a good reason.
Yeah, it is a good reason.
Thanks.
I can't wait for you to read the book.
Yeah, neither can I. I want to see what that was like originally in word form.
It's so much better. There's like entire cool shit that they miss out.
Oh, God.
So much cool I won't shit. Spoil it for you.
Okay, so the question we have today is from Nicholas. And he asks, you have previously talked about potions being like cooking because you have to follow the instructions.
Also, can I just, now this has been brought up, I had a bad white sauce recipe and I can now make white sauce.
Let's give a round of applause to Charlie.
Just to back up my original thing of potions is easy, it's literally just like cooking. And cooking is easy.
Let's not go into this again. My partner and I agree that some cooking is kind of like jazz, and you can play about and still get the desired result.
Jazz is bad for a start.
Going by smell, taste, and instinct. This is true. The best mac and cheese I ever made the other night, I didn't look at a single recipe and just started throwing things in a pan. However, baking is a lot more of a science, as you need to follow the instructions or it will come out wrong. Our question to you is, do you think that it is possible to make a potion with just the ingredients and a vague idea of what the result should be, jazz cooking? Or do you think that making a potion is more like baking, the right steps at the right time?
I think it's more like cooking, because I feel like certain ingredients must have certain properties and certain techniques must have certain effects. So I feel like you should be able to reverse engineer or like kind of guess at a recipe. And I think we kind of learn this in the books as well when they have to make an antidote and it's like just going off like the theory and the rules and stuff like that.
Yeah. So they also point out like whichever side you come down on, what do you think of Snape's improvements to the potions that we see in book 6 in the adapted book? Because, I agree. I think that the reason it seems like cooking in the book is because these are probably, like, the ministry-approved way of making these potions. Because, unlike cooking, some of these potions have, like, quite severe effects. But, yeah, you're right. Like, certain... Let's say lacewing flies are the thing that makes you sleepy. So, if you're making a sleeping draught, adding more is going to make you more sleepy. But that's more dangerous. So, it's like, yes, you can fuck about a bit. But, like... there's a reason why the kids aren't taught to until they're very far through.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's how I see it. It's like, there is like a rhyme and reason to it, but you can kind of use logic to make it up.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, that's what cooking is like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Connor, any thoughts?
Head empty?
No. I mean, again, all I know is from the films, but then like, I feel like this applies to like, alchemy and like the practice of that. I would agree with you that like there is room to fuck about, but it's like a case of, do you want to make the potion or a potion? Because if you were to mess around with the ingredients and the ratios and stuff, you'll come out with something just might not be exactly what you're intending,
and it might also, unlike cooking, you run the risk of it might accidentally be poisoned.
yeah that also.
That's everything for this episode.
Yeah, thank you for coming on, Connor. Yeah.
Thank you for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed being put through this.
This ordeal.
Do you have anything you want to plug? Like, where people can find you?
No, I do nothing. I don't know.
The podcast episode that you wrote for something?
A podcast I have no hand in. I wrote a story that was adapted into audio on the No Sleep podcast, which I would just say go and listen to if you like horror. It's a great podcast.
Yeah, we will link it in the description.
Yeah.
Sure.
I am a terrible girlfriend that hasn't actually listened to that yet.
No, you haven't. So... But you also, like, got my other one printed, so I think that sort of makes up for it.
Yeah, I did. But yeah, so I really hope it's good and I'm not going to be embarrassed by linking it.
I think it could be better, but sure. It's...
Yeah, but every writer is critical of their shit.
Sure, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so go, a link will be in the description to a thing that he wrote.
Yay.
Go listen.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you all so much for listening to this episode. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Goblet of Wine. To find us on social media, search at Goblet of Wine Pod on Twitter or at Goblet of Wine Podcast on Instagram.
We also have a website over at www.gobletofwine.co.uk where you can keep up with everything that we do.
This podcast is produced by our wonderful Hufflepuff tier patrons.
Yolanda, Samuel, Nick, Lewis, Layla, Catherine, Gillian, Ashley, Amelie, and Alexia.
If you'd like to support this podcast, check out our Goblet of Wine Patreon, where you can also gain access to bonus episodes, behind-the-scenes content, and our Discord.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye! Bye.